Your basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, it is Bucks Weekly. This is a supersized version of the night as well. So we got 9 o'clock tip in Sacramento for the Bucks and the Kings. Should be a very, very fun game. And this is one of those rarities where usually get into this. And by the way, we're going to have at least one guest on the show tonight, still efforting one more. But we'll check in with my pal Grant Bill so you can hear him in lacrosse on WKTY. A fine Milwaukee Bucks radio network affiliate there in the great city of La Crosse, Wisconsin. I'll see if he knows you.
He knows me.
I'll see.
He knows of me.
But we'll have Grant Bilson and get into this Sacramento Kings matchup, this road trip overall. This is interesting, too, because usually you always have this Kings matchup either when you're playing the Lakers and the Clippers, or it's you're in San Francisco, Oakland, wherever it is that the Warriors are playing any given year. And you got that one California game, then you also have Sacramento, and then you do one of your mountain trips, whether it's, you know, Utah or Phoenix in this case tomorrow. Utah, Denver, any of those. But any of those groupings, it's usually you would look at the Kings and you'd say, okay, we should and we will win that game against the Kings. Then if we split with the Lakers and Clippers or the Warriors and the Nuggets or the Suns, whoever it is, like we can have a winning road trip. And now this is the weird time where Sacramento Kings game, Warriors are tough, and we saw the Bucks lost that game, a game they should have won. Sacramento game feels like, man, this might be the toughest game on this trip. Phoenix is night two of a back-to-back for you, but also for the Suns. We know Kevin Durant is not going to be in that game. And the Warriors, look, I'm not writing them off, but we have seen enough to, at the very least, have some very serious concerns about the Golden State Warriors moving forward. This Sacramento Kings team, I think all of us started to nitpick them earlier in the year, and great, it's a cute story. The cute story Kings, right? They haven't gone away. And now, look, I was as guilty of this as anyone. You looked at it and you said, okay, great. It's a nice regular season, Sacramento, but be prepared for letdown because you're going to lose whoever your first-round matchup is when things looked a lot different. Now, all of a sudden, I'm not so sure about that. What's going on with Dallas? We just said, what's going on with the Golden State Warriors? How can you trust that? The Memphis Grizzlies, look, who knows, and I'm not even going to speculate when or if we see Ja Morant back. Who knows what goes on there? Memphis has started to slide without him. They're still without Steven Adams. Point being, the Kings are all of a sudden in second. And with this Kevin Durant absence, maybe the Suns stay fourth. So maybe if you're the Kings, your first-round opponent is the Timberwolves, is a slumping Dallas Mavericks team. These are all very, very winnable opponents. And then in that second round, you're talking about a Memphis Grizzlies team. We know they won't have Brandon Clark. They may not have Steven Adams. They might not have Ja Morant. So all of a sudden, I think everybody that started to sell off that Kings stock might be looking to buy it back right now. So it's an interesting time for these Sacramento Kings. But the intrigue is even greater at the top of the Eastern Conference. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight. We are here until 8:30 this evening. Tommy, I don't know if they told you, you're here that late.
We're going to be here even later than
that.
We
got 80 more minutes to go, where we got time to hear from everybody else. But a lot of time between now and our radio network coverage, beginning with Dave Kane and myself, with the Bucks taking on the Kings. But this Eastern Conference race, I've continued to tout playoff status, the website, where they give you your up-to-date on a daily basis percentages for finishing with whatever seed it is. Now, 2 days ago, The Bucks had an 82% chance of finishing with the first seed. 82. It is currently 71. It's still good. It's still very good. You want 71% chances to do anything, right? But Philadelphia is not going away. We told you. Boston, it's fun to take a victory lap, to poke fun at them, to laugh at the struggles they're going through. But just remember, the Bucks went through the same stuff earlier in the season. It's not going to last. The Celtics are too good. They're going to start to come on strong. They're on a six-game road trip. All six of those games appear, except for one, the Sacramento Kings. All six of those games seem to be very winnable. Tonight they have the Houston Rockets. They're not going to go away. Even when it was a two-and-a-half-game lead and three in the loss column, it wasn't over. And dropping from 82% to 71% really illustrates that. So we'll take a deeper look at what's going on in Philadelphia, because they have quietly been maybe the second-best team in the NBA the last month or so. Of course, the Bucks have been the best. But what's going on in Philadelphia, and will the Philadelphia 76ers catch the Boston Celtics? We'll take a look at that. I do want to get into the MVP discussion. I'll get into it a little bit with Grant Bills as well, because we talked about this a little bit after Saturday night's game. It is starting to be very, very nauseating, everything that you're seeing. And look, the big caveat here is there's close to 20 games left. 15, basically, for all of these teams. So there's still a whole lot of time left and some big matchups that are going to sway it. Also, the standings is going to sway who finishes where in the MVP debate. But we'll get into all of that and preview tonight's matchup with the Sacramento Kings. Game two on this three-game Western Conference road trip. Game one, night one, I should say, of a back-to-back. Plenty to get to on tonight's show. 855-616-1620. Is the old National Bank Talk and Text Line. And again, we are here until 8:30 this evening. When we come back, I'll get some thoughts on the remaining two games on this road trip and some MVP chatter with Grant Bills after this on Bucks Weekly. All right, joining me now, the host of the Wisco Sports Show with Grant Bills. You can hear it on the fine Bucks affiliate up in La Crosse, WKTY, and in Madison as well. Grant Bills joining me now on the scene in Arizona as you take your Bucks coverage so seriously. You're ignoring Brewers spring training. Apparently there's something else going on with Aaron Rodgers, and you just said, I got to get out there early for this Bucks-Suns game.
Well, no, today was hilarious, Justin. You'd get a kick out of it because I'm at Brewer Spring Training. I'm at American Family Field in Phoenix right now, and I did my show from here. But I started my show with Aaron Rodgers, and then at 4:30, I took two callers at once from Madison, and I'm like, well, while I have you guys here, let's talk about the NIT really quick. Are we happy that they accepted their bid? Like, how do we feel about this? And one of the Madison guys said, well, it's good that the Badgers are doing this for the local economy. For the bars and the restaurants, it's a nice favor to them, and I would have been really, really bummed if they hadn't done that. And I'm like, look at this. We're at American Family Field in Phoenix. The Bucks are in town. Aaron Rodgers might be a Jet, and I'm talking about the bar and restaurant economy being impacted by the NIT tournament. So that was my show today. Obviously, a lot of Brewers and Aaron Rodgers talk, too, but that part made me laugh.
Full circle to really cover all bases. I mean, you are a well-versed host, that is for sure. The other reason why it's very timely to have you tonight is you are, I don't think I'm putting this mildly, and this isn't hyperbolic, you are the Midwest chapter president of the Sacramento Kings fan club.
Yeah, I love the Kings. Me and a couple of buddies in college, when we all started getting league pass and we would split the cost, I think we all decided we wanted a West Coast team, because when the Bucks games would be done or the national TV games would be done at like 10 o'clock, you want that little extra basketball. So the Kings were our team, and I've always really liked De'Aaron Fox. I loved him coming out of the draft. I just loved him in interviews. Like, he was a guy that I wanted to cheer for. So we've just kind of adopted the Kings as that team that we kind of followed in the periphery and, you know, followed their beat reporters and stuff. And I love Tyrese Haliburton. That was the other thing, is when he went there, I was so psyched. And I thought maybe they'd take Johnny Davis. That didn't work out, and that's a whole other, you know, thing to discuss. But, you know, so the Haliburton trade sucked, but the Kings have obviously been amazing this year, and it's been fun to watch. I'm not pretending like I've been with them for 20 years, but in the last couple of seasons, I've had fun watching them. Well, I'm glad to see they're winning.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting road trip, because most of the time you would get the either the Lakers and Clippers and Kings all in one fell swoop, or you would get what we're seeing now, where you have the Warriors and the Kings, and then one of those mountain teams, whether it's the Suns or the Nuggets or the Jazz, in your same road trip. And it was almost always, okay, well, we know we'll win the Kings game. Maybe if we can steal one other game, we have a winning road trip. And now when you look at this road trip, I know Golden State is a tough place to win, and we saw what happened, where Steph Curry can happen in the final few minutes of a game. I thought that was more than winnable. I thought the Bucks were going to win that game before the tip. The game tomorrow, where you are in Phoenix against the Suns, it's night two of a back-to-back for both of those teams, and we know Kevin Durant won't be playing. That feels like a very winnable game, depending on the injury report we see tomorrow. But it was the Kings game where it was the inverse of, boy, this feels like this is the guaranteed really, really tough game. And I would add, what makes it even more difficult is to play the Kings night one of a back-to-back where you know the pace they're going to play at, and then we got to deal with another game tomorrow, making it even more difficult.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, the Oracle is, or I guess the old Oracle, is it still Oracle? What is it called now?
No, it is.
Where are they playing?
Oh, geez, what is it now? I just know they light the beam.
I shouldn't have put you on the spot. Like
it's something one. Well, it's something one, isn't it?
Yeah, the Golden One.
Golden
Center.
One.
I'm talking about the Warriors.
Oh, the Warriors. Chase Center.
Yeah. Chase Center, thank you. The Chase Center is a tough place to play, and just like the Oracle, right, those fans are nuts, and they love Steph when he gets cooking. The Golden One Center this year has been unbelievable because those fans are just beside themselves, right? Like, they might not play any defense, and they might not be leading the Western Conference, you know, title odds, but the fans are just so amped. That's a playoff-like atmosphere every single night. So you're getting one kind of ruthless fan base on Saturday, and you're getting another one tonight. And then the third game of this little stint is the second game of a back-to-back, and it's against a Phoenix team that, even without Kevin Durant, has got some guys who can really play. So you're not really getting a freebie. Like you said, the Kings would always be the freebie, yet it seems like this Kings game might be the game they have to win because this is the game that, assumedly, they'll be the healthiest for, right? And they already lost the Warriors game. So this might be the game that they just have to end up winning, and that's tough because no one goes to Sacramento to win. They're going to score 135, and their fans are going to be nuts.
They're going to score a lot. They're going to play at a high pace, and I know I have certainly, I wouldn't say taken shots at, but I have had my criticisms and raised eyebrows for De'Aaron Fox. He's been incredible this season, especially in the clutch, and I still think we overhype and make too much about these clutch numbers for teams and individuals.
Yeah.
And especially when you look back through the years, I think it's been 6 years since a team that was in the top three in clutch performance went deep into the playoffs. But the Kings have been really good there, and especially De'Aaron Fox. He's been one of the best in the final 5 minutes of a 5 point or less game. So that's another area we saw Saturday in San Francisco. Tonight in Sacramento, if it comes down to the wire, Warriors have pulled those out. Not to say the Bucks can't, but the Kings have been very good in those spots.
Well, let me flip roles here. Let me ask you a question, because I almost brought this up on my show today, but with Rodgers, and I'm here with the Brewers, I only have so much space for stuff. The Bucks this year have, I'm not going to say they've blown a lot of games, because that's overly simplistic, but there's been, I can count on one hand, which for a team as good as the Bucks is still a lot, 4 or 5 games where they had it. Right, with 2 minutes to go, with 1 minute to go, the Bulls game is a good example. The Warriors game is another. They had it in hand, and they let it slip away. What stock do you put into that? Does that worry, or is that 100% fluky? I'll meet you in the middle of my Kings. I think clutch time stats are a little fluky, even in a big sample size, as we're in mid-March. What do you think about games that the Bucks have had and they've let slip away? I don't know if I'm worried about that or if I should feel good because that means we'll get more good luck in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I suppose I should point this out, too. I mentioned how good the Kings have been in the clutch. The Bucks, by the numbers, have been the best team in the clutch this season.
Really?
Now, a lot of that has changed in the last month and a half when this team got healthy, but they're 25-8 in those games. That's the best winning percentage in clutch games so far this season. Again, you go back to January, that was not the case. So we see how much that changes when this team is healthy, and that's really been the story of all these numbers. The offense is up to the mid-teens now in offensive rating. It was, fifth worst in the NBA up until mid-January. So you see how much things are starting to change when they're healthy. But to that question, I would say, I've said this all along, and it's not me just being a homer defending the team that I work for, but every team.
You would never.
No, I would absolutely never insult the listeners' intelligence of that, but every team in the league has done it this year. Every team in the league has coughed up big leads. It's certainly not great. We've seen the Bucks do it twice with a 20-plus point lead evaporating. We almost saw it evaporate in Brooklyn or in Milwaukee against the Brooklyn Nets. So that's not ideal. But it's been far and wide that we've seen this. And I was trying to track it down as you started your question because I knew that's where you were headed. I can't find the exact tweet, but somebody tweeted out one of the NBA stats accounts pulled all the numbers because this was a question that was frequently asked of, hey, what are teams' records when they blow a lead of X amount or more? And I think what he pulled was 11-point lead or more that you relinquished that lead. The Bucks have the best record in the NBA when they give up an 11-point or more lead. Every single team has done it this year, but the Bucks have been the team that has won those games more than any other team.
Well, and I think there's so many examples, Justin, of why the Bucks' leadership structure and the way their veterans lead, it shows up in so many different ways, right? And for this whole season, I've been on my show saying, hey, you see this? You see this thing that happened? This is a product of Giannis being the type of leader that he is and Drew being the type of personality that he is. And I do think mature, very balanced, very competitive, and very emotionally stable players like Giannis and Drew, you handle a blown lead well. You know, I poke fun at the Celtics a lot because I don't like them. They're a rival. It's a personal thing, right? But I do watch Boston and Philly a little bit, too. They get rattled. They get whiny. They get complainy. You can get in these teams' heads. I don't feel that way about the Bucks. So a Bucks, you know, they can blow an 11-point lead, and I feel better about them than I would, you know, fill in the blank other team just because of the way they're wired. I know Bobby Portis was on with your guy, J.J. Redick, within the last 2 weeks on his podcast and talked about how it's a no-drama, no-nonsense leadership camaraderie. The way that this team is led by its superstars is an advantage that very other few teams have in the lead. And I think, like, their record in games where they blow big leads, their record in close games, I think that's a product of that. And Justin, this team, like in 2021, has lost some real heartbreakers. I expect them, because of the way that they're led and the way that they're wired, to learn from those and to be a better team later in the season for it. That was the case in 2021. I would bet my money on that also being the case in a couple of months this year.
A couple things. So the 11-point lead number that I cited, or the vague citing that I made, it's not a lot.
Yeah.
I'll acknowledge that an 11-point lead is not a lot in this league. I think that's the number that was landed on because this is the most frequent double-digit lead that we've seen teams accrue throughout the year. So that's the starting point there. But 11 isn't a lot. You should be able to come back from 11. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the Brooklyn game is a great example because I think the Bucks, I don't know what their biggest lead was at that point.
I think it was 28.
I don't look at numbers really or watch games. Yeah, they were up big. And you saw in the fourth quarter when it got tight, Justin, they were surgical, right? The way they hunted Watanabe with either Lopez or Portis, the way they executed, they beat that zone by getting the ball into the high post. They executed at such a high level, even when that lead evaporated and Brooklyn got right up on their heels, they executed so well. Coach Bud drew up a couple of amazing after-time outplays. So Saturday is a great example of how this team can operate, even when things start to tighten up and other teams might get a little freaked out and the Bucks don't.
All right, we'll take a break here. More with Grant after this. I do want to get into the MVP debate and what he just touched on with the J.J. Redick podcast. So more with Grant after this on Bucks Weekly. All right, we will hear more from Grant Bills just momentarily, but now time for the news from the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here's Jessica Gatzo. Bucks Weekly continues here, and I'm joined once again by Grant Bills. You mentioned the J.J. Redick thing, too, with the Bobby Portis interview. I'm not going to single out anybody here, but I did find it funny that Bobby Portis told us this story 2.5 years ago, that he pitched himself to the Bucks and pitched himself to Giannis, and now he goes on J.J. Redick's podcast and just casually mentions it again. And it's, whoa, did you hear this story? Like, yes, you heard it, too.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Why do we do this all the time?
Well, and something else, I listened to that podcast yesterday because I was flying down to Arizona, and I really hate it when podcasters and folks who aren't in traditional media, say, complain about what the traditional media talks about. It's so wired, and I think Bucks fans, we've been good enough long enough now where we should stop caring. It's not always a good thing to be talked about on First Take every day. Like, they don't talk about the best teams every day for a reason. There's no drama. There's no intrigue. So to say, hey, the Bucks have won 16 in a row, I bet they're not leading First Take tomorrow. Why would they? It's a debate show. What is there to debate? So the whole national media and the narrative and how much love the Bucks get, it's so tired, and I wish everyone would just stop it. And that includes Bucks fans and J.J. Redick.
The last thing I have for you, and I acknowledge it is, it's way too early to have the full discussion, but this is just the I talked about this the other night. I'm just kind of setting the table for this. Be ready for it, because Joel Embiid is going to win the MVP, it seems like. That it, you know, the whole MVP discussion, it's gotten disgusting, and it's so, so tiring. But it did seem like we reached the point of, you know what, if Nikola Jokic is this great, he should win it 3 years in a row, and people started to accept that. And then all of a sudden, there became all of this, yeah, but. And even for Bucks fans to point out, yeah, but Giannis didn't get to win it 3 years in a row. If the point is we want to acknowledge the player that's best, fine. If that means it changes and starting with Nikola Jokic, you can win three in a row and we acknowledge this is a regular season award. It's not about, you know, your playoff history. Fine, that should be what we're striving for, and you shouldn't complain that Giannis didn't get that benefit. But it's just gotten so far out of whack, and it does seem like there's Nikola Jokic voters that have either been bullied into or have changed their mind on, well, you know what, for legacy of the game reasons and for the fact that now we're just starting to pile on his defense, he's not going to win it. And look, it's going to be tough to justify the record, too, if the Nuggets finish right around the same as the 76ers. It's going to be Joel Embiid, because we see this every single year. We go with, well, he hasn't won one yet, so we'll give it to him. So I'm just saying, I know Bucks fans are going to hate it, and you're going to make a case for Giannis, and he has won, but Joel Embiid is going to win the MVP. It certainly seems like that.
Okay, so there's so many. I know we only have so much time. There's a million different things in there that I want to address. First of all, right, the Jokic MVP, I'm thinking about this in political terms, very loosely, bear with me. The Jokic getting a third MVP would be a very conservative choice, in my opinion, in that we have these metrics, and they all say he's the best, and I don't care about your feelings about how he's won three in a row, and I don't care about the history of the game. The numbers tell us this. The games tell us this. He's the MVP. That's the most conservative view, right? The most liberal view would be, well, yeah, he's won two in a row. Not only do we not give it to him, let's give it to the other guy just because the other guy hasn't won one yet. Like, they're two massive extremes on this MVP spectrum, and I feel like Giannis is in the middle. Giannis and the Bucks are probably going to get the one seed, right? And I was told all year long that Nikola Jokic needs to win it because he was the one seed. Okay, so if we're off Jokic, now we're going to Embiid, and the Sixers have been really good the last couple months. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But, Justin, I long for the days where the MVP voting was simple. You couldn't win three in a row unless you did something ridiculous, and if you won two in a row, you would not be considered seriously again until you won a title. Giannis won two in a row and was not considered in year three. I didn't have a problem with that. I don't think any Bucks fan did, because we focused away from the awards and to the playoffs as well. And then Giannis wins one, and he's not back into serious consideration, despite being the one seed, despite being better record-wise than Embiid and very comparable statistically. I don't get it. I really don't get it. It's like, all right, we're figuring it out that Jokic maybe isn't it, but now the conclusion is Embiid. Wait a minute. We skipped a bunch of steps. I don't know where we got lost, but we got lost. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm anti-Jokic because I don't think Jokic should win three in a row, not necessarily because I believe Giannis should win. But I'm anti-Embiid because Giannis should win, right? Like, if we're giving it to someone who's not Jokic, it should be Giannis. I don't understand how we're drawing another conclusion. Well, I'm very frustrated. Well, I'm tired by this debate, but I will participate in it as long as need be.
Well, and I guess that's the argument for both Giannis and Joel Embiid, is I think there is this retroactive. We do it with Kobe now. A lot of that changed with Kobe's tragic passing, too. But, man, can you believe Kobe Bryant only won X amount of MVPs? We do it with Michael Jordan, where it's, man, he should have been the MVP every year.
Won titles, though.
Right, right.
Which I know you know, but I'm just adding. They won titles. Embiid hasn't been to a conference final.
We do this thing, though, where you retroactively say, man, how did this guy not win more? And I think I have a fear that is going to be a major thing with Giannis, and I think it's a proactive. He's been great. I'm not trying to diminish it. But with Joel Embiid, too, oh, we got to get him one, and here's a perfect opportunity for him to get it.
Sure, but I understand. Embiid could go his whole career without winning an MVP. I'm smart enough, and I know most NBA fans are smart enough to realize, yeah, Embiid was great. He happened to play in the same conference at the same time as Giannis. And he happened to play at the same time and beat. There's no shame in being an elite player that's not quite as elite as everyone else. Like, I don't walk around every day of my life thinking, man, why didn't Drew Brees win more MVPs? Drew Brees was great, but he wasn't as great as everyone else. Like, that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. The cookie is crumbling for Joel Embiid, and yet people, it seems, are going to go out of their way to give this guy an MVP when I don't think he really deserves it. He doesn't deserve it as much as Giannis does.
All right, Grant, we will, I'll check in with you personally to see what the vibe is in Phoenix for this game, tomorrow. And, we'll rehash this conversation as we get, cause again, 16 games left for the Bucks. You have a game against the Celtics and Sixers. That's going to go a long way in deciding it. And Embiid has a game against Jokic on the schedule yet. So there's still a lot that can change. It's just the feel I've started to get for this whole thing.
And your feel is usually correct, Justin. You know I respect your feel. I ask your wisdom and guidance and tutorship over many things. The MVP is just one of them. I appreciate you having me on. I will check in from, not talking stick, what is it?
Yeah,
it's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, it changes every year. So you'll check in from the arena in Phoenix. I still refer to it as America West, but...
From the ballpark. I'll check in from the arena, the forum, tomorrow night, Justin.
All right, enjoy the rest of the trip. We'll check in with you again later.
Thanks, Justin.
Grant Bills from WKTY in La Crosse, a city very near and dear to my heart, as listeners of this program, of this station, are well aware. And Tommy, there was a moment in time when I thought maybe this space would be reserved for you, but Grant Bills is really like my radio son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Am I like... adopted son or anything?
No, maybe the neighbor kid.
Okay. Okay, like the cool neighbor kid or the one
just
that
the neighbor
not,
kid. I think Justin Pottinger is probably closer to being the adopted son.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm least, more involved in the night stuff, I guess.
Yeah, you're in the conversation, I suppose.
Okay. I try. Maybe like nephew can
you
be
do.
In there.
Yeah, we'll see. The same things I asked him, I do want to bounce off of you. As well, the audience and you, Tommy, because look, it's way too early, but it does kind of feel like we already, well, at the risk of getting ahead of ourselves, I'll explain what I mean after this. More Bucks Weekly comes your way next on WTMJ.
Yeah, money!
All right, my thanks to Grant Bills for his extended time tonight on the show. If you missed that interview, it's no courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks, but a big-name Milwaukee area or Wisconsin sports talker interview nonetheless. If you missed any of that interview or any of tonight's show, you can find it where you get your podcasts. Just search Bucks Weekly. Right, Tommy? The radio nephew.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm going to... podcast this show now.
See,
I was gonna.
I saw your eyebrow raise a couple of times when Grant and I were talking there. But what do you make of this MVP debate that's going on?
I guess looking at it right now, I tend to disagree with you thinking Joel Embiid is going to win the MVP. I do think it will be Jokic.
And, look, I should say, and I said during that interview, too, there's a lot of time left, and there's, what, four big games left. You have Embiid versus Celtics, Embiid versus the Bucks, Giannis versus Embiid, assuming there's full health there. You still have Joel Embiid taking on Nikola Jokic in a Nuggets versus Sixers matchup, so three big games left there. Giannis versus the Celtics, too. So four big games that are going to go a long way. And Joel Embiid plays the Suns yet. So there's a lot of big games left, and that's going to shape a lot of the narrative. My point is, I think it started to swing towards, you know what? We owe it to him. He was the runner-up 2 years in a row, and that's not to take away. He's been incredibly good.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's, we can't do three in a row with Jokic, and Joel Embiid's been the bridesmaid too much. Let's get him the award.
And definitely, I feel like it's a two-man race now. Maybe it was a three-man until this latest
you
Giannis.
You think it's two-man between Embiid and Jokic.
Yeah, I don't think Giannis has a chance. I think this injury kind of hurts his chances. Not that it's going to really impact a Bucks fan's view of how his season went. I'm saying in the national scheme, I think he missed too much time with these two guys playing every day, doing what they're doing this season. I don't think Giannis has a chance, no.
You don't think he has a chance?
I do not.
That is incredibly...
I think it's guaranteed he'll be third in the voting.
So what if I told you Giannis has only played two fewer games than Joel Embiid has?
Yeah, but this latest stretch is what really matters.
Well, he's playing tonight.
Correct, yeah. But how many games did he just miss right here?
Three.
I think that right now, that was more of a storyline of him not being in, and Jokic and Embiid playing how they've been playing the second half especially.
I'll give you this. Yeah, to your point, if Giannis played against the Warriors, I personally think Giannis would have had a pretty big night against that defense and attacking the rim with no real rim protectors on that team. And that's the issue we've seen with the Warriors through the years. Not that their defense is bad, but they don't have anybody to really slow down Giannis. So Giannis misses that game where these national games are your chance to rewrite the narrative. He had a chance or would have had a chance to put up big numbers, and all of a sudden, well, maybe it's Giannis. Because you're started to hear more and more voices say, are we sure it's not Giannis? So I will grant you, him missing those three games at least paused that. I think saying he has no chance is a little strong.
I think he would have to have a pretty incredible last couple of weeks of the season right here, which he's more than capable of, I'm sure. But if they keep doing what they're doing in Joel Embiid in Philly and Jokic in Denver, I don't see the buzz for them winning an MVP slowing down and Giannis being able to catch up, unless he maybe is averaging over 40 points a game for the rest of this stretch right here.
So here's where, and I kind of made this point, here's right now, to me, why I would say, I shouldn't say he's going to win it. He is in pole position, Embiid is, to win it, I think. Because the Sixers are 45-22. They've been, as I said earlier, the second best team in the NBA for a while now, behind only the Bucks, who were, what, 22-4 in their last 26 games. And for Philadelphia, it's really been since December. They've been very, very good since then, and that kind of lined up
with a tough schedule.
Getting healthy, yeah, and they've played some tough games. They have a very tough schedule remaining. I mentioned they have the Denver Nuggets. They have the Phoenix Suns. They still got the Celtics. They still got the Bucks, and those are road games. So it's a very, very tough schedule that they have left, so he's going to have even more opportunities to shine. And we already saw Joel Embiid outplay Nikola Jokic in one of those one-on-ones earlier this season. But the big thing is Sixers have been very good, and quite frankly, I think forcing a lot of us to reconsider how we viewed the 76ers. They're 45-22. The Nuggets are 46-22. A lot of the case for Jokic is, man, these are video game numbers. He's a walking triple-double. What he's doing with this group, you would point to the on-off numbers, although those have kind of been juiced up a bit because he's only playing with the starters. So,
of course,
off-court numbers are going to look terrible when all the starters are sitting at the same time.
Denver is at top of the West. Does that play a role into it as well?
Sixers,
you could argue this is the most qualified year Jokic has for MVP of these three.
Well, I don't know about that, but the Sixers essentially have the same record as the Nuggets. And if they win both the head-to-head games, too, I mean, that's the, well, are we so sure? And what, look, Joel Embiid just hit the game winner again. You could say, well, you shouldn't need a game winner against the Portland Trailblazers, but still, he did it. He basically hit the game winner against the Bucks in a big matchup. So that's a big part of the story for Joel Embiid. We still got over 30 minutes left as we'll transition to Bucks shoot around at the top of the hour. And I do think, I don't want to count my chickens before they're hatched here. I think we're going to have another guest in those 30 minutes for Bucks shoot around. But we'll take a closer look at those Sacramento Kings again. Giannis is going to play tonight, as we heard from head coach Mike Budenholzer just a couple of moments ago. So we'll take a closer look at this matchup with the Kings and wrap up the hour after this on Bucks Weekly. Bucks in Sacramento tonight taking on the Kings. It is a 9 o'clock tip. 8:30 is when our pregame coverage begins on the Bucks Radio Network. You can join myself and Dave Kane for that. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, the fun with me continues as we got you for Bucks shoot around from 8 to 8:30, efforting one guest for that show. to share some of her thoughts on what we've seen on this road trip. So we'll keep you posted on that. Speaking of keep you posted, one game worth pointing out in action right now in Houston. I mentioned it's a six-game road trip for the Boston Celtics. Six relatively winnable games, right? Five relatively easy games, and then you have the Kings on there as well. They're losing to the Houston Rockets. It's early. It's almost halftime, but 50-48, Houston leading the Boston Celtics. If you missed the interview with Grant Bills, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Bucks Weekly. We will take a closer examination of who the Bucks have tonight in the Sacramento Kings on Bucks Shootaround. That begins just after the top of the hour news.
It's time for Buck Shoot Around on WTMJ. We get you warmed up, stretched out, and ready for tip-off. This is Buck Shoot Around. Now, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, the Bucks getting set for Game 2 of this three-game Western Conference road trip tonight, taking on the Sacramento Kings. A tough loss on Saturday night in the first of those games against the Warriors, and a big one again tomorrow in Phoenix against the Suns. To share some thoughts on this road trip overall, I'll pick her brain as well on what we just talked about with Grant and the rest of the Eastern Conference is Camille Davis. You can find her work on the Technical Foul podcast and as a frequent contributor on the Locked On Bucks podcast as well. Camille, I was saying in the last hour, the interesting part about this road trip is for the last like decade plus, you would always have the Kings on a California road trip, and that was the game you would point to as, well, we should win this. If we can split the others, then it's a nice trip. But now, you know, I know you lost in San Francisco, but this might be the toughest game of the three.
Yeah, the Kings this year are truly a contender. Like in the West this year, they are really coming with, like, these are not the Kings we've been seeing for the last few years. This is a real playoff caliber team here with the Sacramento Kings, and they play so well at home as well. I also saw earlier that they're the only team in the Western Conference right now with a winning record on the road as well. So the Kings have been playing some really good basketball, and it's no longer a game that you can just assume you're going to go in there and win easily without any effort. They are an offensive juggernaut. So your defense has to be up to par, and you have to also be able to knock down some buckets.
Well, and that's the thing about having the Kings on a back-to-back is it's almost more difficult when you play them first because you're going to use up so much energy at the pace that they play, and it's kind of what we saw in the fourth quarter for large stretches against the Warriors where you could see the Bucks trying to slow it down and don't let the Warriors get up and down the floor shooting threes. You're going to have to do the same tonight. And then, oh, by the way, you got to play tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's tough to do. That's really tough to do. So that's one thing we talk about this team is the depth on it. In these situations, it's good to have because, you know, you might see how the first night goes on that back-to-back, and then on the second night you can adjust accordingly because with the depth on this team, you don't expect too much fall off or anything different if everybody's not playing necessarily. They've shown this year that this is a team that can put together victories, even in some difficult situations, but it's a team that's deep enough with enough vets that know what their roles are and what they should be doing, that, you know, it makes it a little bit easier on some of the guys where you don't necessarily have to play them as many minutes. You can add some more guys into the rotation for the back-to-back.
So it's still early. It's only halftime, and we've seen leads don't last in this league, but
right.
The Celtics are losing to the Rockets at halftime, 62-55. I haven't quite reached the point where I'm officially more concerned playing the Sixers than I am the Celtics, but the fact that it's starting to become a conversation is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I don't blame you for feeling that way, given how the Celtics started the season. Like, they were on fire despite everything else that was going on with them and the coaching situation. They came out and they performed. And after All-Star break, you know, things have just not been clicking the same way in Boston. I know they've had some injury misfortune, but yet and still, this is a team with good depth where you should feel good about who you're putting out there on the court in the regular season, of course. Playoff rotations are different, but at this time, you would expect the Celtics to still be playing some pretty good basketball. So to see them starting to slump as we're heading into the playoffs, doesn't feel like it's a great sign for Boston. Wouldn't want to take them lightly at all, but, you know, you're hoping to be playing your best basketball as you're entering into the playoffs, and things seem to be going in the complete opposite direction in Boston right now.
Yeah, basically the inverse of what they did last season, and it does almost bring to light more importance on, man, if you could have just closed out that game 2 weeks ago against the 76ers, because, look, it's not the final nail in the coffin, but I think it would have been six in the loss column if you would have won that game. That's a lot to make up with less than 20 games remaining. And now Philadelphia can't be ruled out of the conversation for the one seed, especially since at best you, the Bucks, can only split the season series.
Yeah, yeah. It goes to show that all of these games matter. Like, I know now is a time where so many people are paying attention to what's going on because, you know, we're into that final playoff push, but all of those games matter along the way, especially when you get down to this part of the season and you're looking at the standings and everybody's starting to get bunched up. It's like, I wish I could have gotten this one a couple weeks ago. I wish I could have gotten this one a few months ago when I saw this team, just to have that head-to-head tiebreaker. So, you know, it's important to try to come out with your best foot forward. And like you said, losing that Philly game was one that I do wish we had at this moment, for sure.
So it's also funny that Playoff Status is a website that will calculate the numbers on a daily basis and show you, okay, as of this day, this team has X percent chance to finish at this seed. 2 days ago, the Bucks had an 82% chance at the one seed. You lose to the Warriors. Both the Sixers and the Celtics keep winning, and now it's a 71% chance, which on the surface is still very good, but to see it drop 11 percentage points, it's why you're glad you're in that pole position, but there's still a little bit of uneasy feeling knowing there's two important games left at the end of this month, early April, that are going to swing things entirely.
Right, right. And you just have to try to keep playing. And again, it's important to try to make sure guys are healthy going down this final stretch. And we've seen that with Giannis and some of the other guys. I know Joe Ingles is out tonight, I believe, for, you know, just kind of resting his body. So it's important, but you also want to have these games. So it's finding that balance of, like, we're trying to win. We're trying to stay healthy, but we don't want to give anything away at the same time.
So going back to Saturday, Joe Ingles was terrific against the Warriors in that game. And, you know, leaving that game, it was one of the more frustrating losses because it really felt like a game you handed to the Warriors. But in a strange way, you almost left that game still feeling a lot better about the Bucks, and especially talking about those other teams in the East, because you took the best shot of the Warriors without Giannis. And if it weren't for two really big mental mistakes and miscues, you walk out of Chase Center with a win, something that not a lot of teams have done this season, and you do it without a two-time MVP.
Right, right. And on that level, like, that game was frustrating because it's a game that could have been won, for sure. You see at the end of the game where Brooke has that big block, and you're thinking that's going to ice the game. Drew's bringing the ball up the court, and he turns it over, and you're just kind of like, that's a moment where you're like, you know, we could have iced it here, but you don't do that. And when you don't take advantage or take care of the ball when Steph Curry is starting to go nuclear, things tend to end bad for the other squad. So it was definitely frustrating in that regard with that game. But it does give you hope because, like you said, when you look at the Warriors this year, and historically, they've just always played so well at home. We know this year they're having the problems on the road, but we knew that was a game they're going to want because as crowded or as convoluted as the Eastern, you know, one seed race is, the standings in the West from, I think it's what, 5 to 13 right now? It's just crazy bundled. So knowing that the Warriors were going to come out against the Bucks with all that they had, given that they had just lost three in a row, being able to steal that one would have definitely been like a, wow, this team is really on to something here. But, you know, the ball didn't bounce our way. Too many turnovers. Lost the rebounding battle terribly against the Warriors. So it was just one that, you know, we could have snatched but just couldn't pull out.
Yeah, you mentioned that too. I mean, that is, it's not an area of concern, but I'm sure it's something that's been a heavy emphasis from Coach Budenholzer and the rest of the staff as we've seen that start to bubble up. It shouldn't be just the absence of Giannis means you do a poor job rebounding the ball. We've seen the defensive rebounding kind of take a step backward in recent games, and that has given teams like the Nets and their comeback a lot of life, and it certainly kept the Warriors alive and to help them come back and win that one on Saturday night. Talking with Camille Davis of the Technical Foul Podcast. Before I let you go, I mentioned the MVP debate with a guest that we had on earlier, and how I guess you and I haven't talked about this, so I'm curious your thoughts. I'm just kind of over it, and it's how many twists and turns this whole discussion has taken the last couple of weeks and months. It's just exhausting, and I know there's a lot of time left, but it kind of feels like it's set up for Joel Embiid to win it this year.
Oh, I did not expect the name to be said there to be Joel Embiid. I thought you were going to go with Nikola Jokic there because, you know, the narrative around, like, well, I mean, he's playing so well, like, why not give him the third MVP? But I agree with you. I've grown really, really tired with the overall conversation. The MVP conversation in itself has gotten, I guess I would say, toxic over the last few years. I feel like a lot of conversations when it comes to basketball discourse now, like the nuance is just lost. And we're unable to have certain conversations without belittling or putting down another player. Like, it's very easy to make an MVP case for somebody without trying to say that the other candidates are trash or unworthy of being in the conversation. Like, similar to last year, there are some guys that are putting up some amazing numbers. All of them have a solid MVP case. It's just really trying to make the strongest case for why you think that your candidate should win it. At this point, with all of the conversation that's been going around it, I could see Joel Embiid winning it, I guess, now that you mention it. I just never really thought about it until now, because I have been seeing articles, you know, talking about how Giannis is having a very, you know, ineffective season, and he's down year. So it's like that narrative is getting out there now, and I'm not sure if he'll be able to change that before the season ends. So I guess it is between Jokic and Embiid at this point.
Well, and so it sounds like, so Tommy, our producer, basically said there's no chance Giannis wins it this year. I think that's going a bit far.
Well, Camille, this is Tommy. What would you say is Giannis's chance? I would say 5% in my head is what it sounds like right now. Between 90% of that going to Jokic and Giannis, however you think of 95%.
Ooh, I wouldn't go that low. Giannis is at least double digits. Like, even on the most conservative, I would probably say like a 20% shot at it.
Yeah, I would say like a 25, like 40% Jokic, 40% Embiid, 35 Jokic, 25 Giannis, something like that.
I can't do the math that quick, so I trust you that adds up to 100. But I don't think that Giannis has got the national buzz like those two do right now.
Hey, we still got a couple games to change that if we.
I hope so. I'm rooting for it.
That's true. You can find her on the Technical Foul Podcast and frequently on the Locked On Bucks Podcast. Always good to catch up with you, Camille. We'll do this again soon.
For sure. Take care.
Camille Davis, again, find her work on the Technical Foul Podcast and frequently get the chance of myself and Kane Pittman and Camille on the Locked On Bucks Podcast doing the three-headed approach quite a bit on that show. Take a look at the latest of what's going on in Houston as we get you set for tip-off tonight in Sacramento. We'll do that after this on Bucks Shootaround. Early, but this is going to be an important game for the Bucks. They are early into the third quarter in Houston. The Rockets lead the Celtics 66-58 early into the third quarter. I mentioned this to Grant, and for the life of me, I can't find the tweet again. Does exist. It's not fake news. But there was that mention of, okay, here's teams' records when giving up a lead of 11 or more points. And the Bucks had the best record of any team in the league. Point being, an 8-point lead is not a lot. And especially when we're talking about the Houston Rockets, who are starting Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Tari Eason, Kenyon Martin, like, you should be able to come back from an 8-point deficit against that team. But the larger conversation is, what's going on with the Celtics? Both these teams that represented their conferences last year in the finals, you're starting to, in the case of one of the teams, get some very, very serious doubts about, right? In the case of the Boston Celtics, I just mentioned it to Camille, I'm not quite there yet, saying, you know what? I'd rather play the Celtics than I would the Sixers. But the fact that it's become a conversation is remarkable. And the fact that the Philadelphia 76ers, again, I'm not going to say you breathed life into them, but you kept them on life support when that 18-point lead disappeared. And they won that game. Because if we go back two Saturdays ago, you're six games up in the loss column. There would have been, I think, 19 games left at that time. That's not a lot of time for that, to make up six games. And more importantly, you would have guaranteed at the very least you would split the season series, if not win it. Now, it's three games in the loss column. Sixers hold the advantage in the season series. If the Sixers win that final meeting between these two teams on April 2nd, the Sixers win the tiebreaker. And that makes that three or less number loom even larger. If that score holds in Houston, the Boston Celtics will be two games back of the Bucks and three back in the loss column, pending what happens tonight in Sacramento. But you got to take care of business in Sacramento tonight. A very, very tough opponent in those Sacramento Kings. They're going to play at an incredibly high pace. They're going to run things through Domantas Sabonis. And De'Aaron Fox has been the best clutch player in the league this season. The Bucks, by the numbers, have been the best clutch team in the league this season. The most wins in games that have moved into clutch situations. But again, I think that's a number we tend to make a bit too much of. The individual performances as well. De'Aaron Fox has hit some big shots. The point is, this is not the Sacramento Kings of old. They finally snapped that playoff drought. And not only that, they're already past 40 wins this season. So this is a really good Sacramento Kings team. Started last season with that deal to bring in Domas Sabonis. So the Bucks will have their work cut out for them tonight. And then tomorrow, we'll see, number one, how the Bucks regroup after playing an up-paced, fast-tempo team in the Kings, but also what that injury report is going to look like. We know Joe Ingles is missing tonight's game. We'd presume he plays tomorrow. What does that mean for Chris Middleton? We will know momentarily. Bucks pregame show begins momentarily with Dave Kane and myself. My thanks to Camille and everybody for tuning in. Talk to you then.